Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Is the main course. My name is Philip Gilmore, in the studio with Alexis McLaughlin and a very, very special guest, chocolate royalty, Daniel Sklar, is here from Fine and Raw. We're talking chocolate today. Yes, welcome, Daniel.
Thanks, Phil. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, it's kind of a special block we have here in Bushwick. We have Heritage Foods. We have Fine and Raw, we have Momo Sushi Shack, and then we have Roberta's right here all in the same block.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's mythical, I would say.
Yeah, I think this is the coolest block in the world, maybe.
Oh,
in my opinion.
definitely the world, possibly extend further out into galaxies, universes.
Milky Way.
Yeah.
It's definitely the best neighbors to have.
Yeah. Milky Way, no chocolate pun intended.
Mm.
Yeah. So the opening song there was Chufu and Breed Love, which, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Chufu, world famous DJ producer, was DJing at the Chocolate Factory last weekend. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. He killed it.
Yeah.
He totally killed it. We got shut down, unfortunately, at the wee hours of the morning because... I mean, we're the coolest neighborhood, but we also are a semi-residential neighborhood,
and
you know, we have to be respectful at some point.
And
Phil, did you call the cops?
Yeah, I called the cops. Nice. Yeah. I live right across the street. So, and Chufu's
music like is a little bass heavy. Bass heavy.
Daniel, Fine and Raw did a benefit for 108 Lives, which is Hector Marcel's foundation that helps support street beggars and orphanages. And
he's Kathmandu. Beautiful.
Hector's the most beautiful man I've
this
ever met.
This is the event that we were hucking the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to make sure we get full credit with Daniel.
I heard when you guys were hawking it, I was sending out
because you're a listener
hot spirals
every
to you guys.
Week?
Yeah.
Yeah, dedicated.
Oh, you're the best.
You don't get my fan mail?
No, actually, I haven't gotten that yet.
Well, I actually send you postcards.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, so how was your week, Alexis?
I had a great week. It was busy.
Yeah?
It was a week.
Mm-hmm.
Friday, speaking of having a good week,
yeah.
Balthazar.
Oh, yeah.
Famous, wonderful, amazing, fine dining, great restaurant. Known for their, like, iconic mirrors that hang above the diners, like the circle of the dining room, one of them fell.
It was like a giant mirror, like 10 by 8 or something.
Yeah, these are not like, you know, like, oh, let me do my makeup, a little mirror. Like, this is like, you know, giant
and
mirrors.
They're thick mirrors, too.
Antique glass fell on a customer. One of them was a dignitary because...
It's fell on several customers,
yeah.
I think. Yeah,
or a whole table.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that just... It sounds like a nightmare situation if you have a restaurant.
Total nightmare. Yeah.
I mean, it's as a restaurant owner, you take so many precautions and making sure nobody gets poisoned or making sure somebody doesn't get drink too much or slip on the sidewalk outside. Like I'm shoveling snow five times a week and buying salt so people don't slip and you just get scared of people injuring themselves. But something like that is just. I mean, so scary. Something
7 years bad luck too.
Yeah, 7 years. Yeah. No. It's not. It didn't break.
Oh, it didn't break.
Oh
yeah,
my god!
Did
that
you know
just,
that?
That's just a testament to how thick that glass is.
There's probably so much lead and mercury in that thing.
So just squished everyone. Everyone became 2D.
So I guess they're kind of touting this guy, the French diplomat guy. He's like a hero because I guess he's the one that got cut in the head. So he has this gash, but it just hit him, and he wasn't under it. So I guess it he lifted it up before any. anybody could help, and he, like, people are saying
that's
he's
great.
Like,
he must be
French Superman,
totally French secret agent. In
yeah,
restaurants.
Exactly. Yeah.
Rock axe. Shake Shack also went public with their IPO.
Yeah, a few weeks ago. Yeah, can you imagine that? Like,
wow.
He, Danny
More than
Myers
doubled
made,
in, yeah. in the day. The
mm. Yeah, Danny Myers made $250 million in one day, a restaurateur.
That makes no sense to me. It's like, that's not a number. That's not a thing.
Do you guys know how Shake Shack started? He had, he had 11 Madison Park, and then he had Tabla, which were on the same street.
Right.
Which
had the documentary about that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's actually a good documentary.
It's great. Is. So, I mean, that he wanted to make Madison Square Park was kind of like downtrodden, so he wanted to kind of like make it, which now it's the coolest place in the world, but like it just started as just like a little, you know, hot dog truck, you know, or like a little hot dog stand with burgers and in 2001
as a reaction to 11 Madison Park.
Well, yeah, just like he wanted something cool there and just make the park cool, and then that that got bigger and bigger. Now there's 63 Shake Shacks and there're like hundreds more on the way. And
wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an empire.
Yeah, that's an empire.
It totally is.
Now it's a public empire.
Now it's a public empire.
A very rich public empire. Mm. They do have a great burger.
Can you imagine in like let's say 10 years from now that every Whole Foods in the world and every Associated Market and Publix and Winn-Dixie and every grocery store in the world had your chocolate? Can you imagine that?
Then I'd go and have some coffee with Danny Meyer and we'd chill out and talk finances.
When is the Fine and Raw IPO?
Yeah, well, you know, we're scheduled for 20 million and two.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, that would be neat. He could probably have some good advice for you for your IPO.
He totally would. I believe he does sell another Chocolatier's chocolate in there. So I think I missed the boat on that one.
For now.
Yeah, for now.
Yeah.
There's always room.
Can you imagine one day where Shake Shack milkshakes are made with Fine and Raw chocolate?
Ooh, delish.
How did you actually start out? Was like were you originally doing this out of your kitchen or?
Yeah. So I had I call it my secret chocolate lab, which was my loft in Williamsburg.
Very secret.
Yeah, very 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 secret. And I mean that was circa 2007, and just jamming confections with my friends and. My next door neighbors were Whisk and Ladle. Do you guys mm-hmm. you know
yeah.
them?
Yeah.
So, I was making confections and then, they wanted a couple and then they took it to Bedford Cheese Shop and then my friends would want some and, super organic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it? How the chocolate? I don't know. Like cause you make other things. I don't know. You bring me over little treats every now and then.
Oh, some. Yeah.
Organ meats, sous vide, and pâtés. Yeah. But have you just always been cooking or always been in the kitchen?
I've always been eating. Well, how's that?
That's a commonality we all share.
Yeah. I mean,
that's not broad or anything.
Yeah,
it's very true. But I've had passion for the kitchen, you know, like being in the kitchen and, mm-hmm. and making sure that if there was batter in a bowl that got licked clean. I would say that was my specialty for a very long time until I actually started making the batter. You know, you got to earn your stripes.
Yeah.
And then actually what happened was I was in finance, speaking of IPOs, and that's why I came to New York in the first place, besides, you know, destiny kicks and adventure. Mm-hmm. And then I got out of finance.
What were you doing in finance?
I was a financial analyst.
Oh.
You can actually do really interesting stuff in finance. You can create economic models that resemble reality, but are not based on reality at all. It's very cool stuff. You know, as opposed to making a chocolate, which is based on something that is not reality, but it becomes reality.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the complete opposite. I was.
So you were crunching numbers and licking egg beaters.
Yeah, I was crunching numbers and just like, you know, when you're in finance, you actually make a lot of money and then you have a very stressful life, so you have to blow the money as well. like it helps retail therapy, etc.
Wall Street,
yeah,
the movie,
yeah, totally. So you end up going to all the restaurants in New York, and you know, that's also kind of an education in itself. Just hitting up all the good spots and all the, and you know,
when did you move to New York?
2003.
And I'm guessing with the accent, to place you, I would say Northern Finland or maybe Wales.
Wow. I'd give you one more guess, but I think we should just cut our losses right now.
Save the Ithaca.
Yeah.
Did I say it right?
Oh, that was good. That was, wow.
Oh, Danny, you're from Save the Ithaca.
I'm from Ithaca. Yeah.
He speaks Ithacans.
Yeah, ik praat it all. I'm actually going back on Thursday. For a little trip, yeah.
Are you going to see Joanne?
I am. Yes.
Hello, Joanne.
Hi, Joanne.
She's lovely. Your mother's lovely.
Hi, Mom.
What are you going back for? I didn't know about this. You didn't clear this with the Heritage
Foods office. With the block.
Do we get a goodie bag before you leave? We're going to miss you.
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Of course. Yeah, I'm going to make sure that you guys don't go chocolate deficient while I'm gone.
Awesome.
It's important.
We'll give you some steaks to bring back to Mom, too.
Yeah. She likes lamb chops.
Oh, we can do that.
Yeah. When you were working in finance in 2003, 2004, 2005, what were some of the restaurants that you ate at back then? Because I know some of the iconic restaurants that were open in that time period are now closed. Or were there any memorable restaurants that you ate at?
WD... 50. 50. That really like stands out for me.
They just closed their doors.
They just closed
November 30th.
Yeah.
Wow, that's sad. Let's see. I'm blanking.
Did you eat 11 Madison Park?
No, I never went there. Oh. I used to go to Smith and Walensky's a lot for business lunches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, all of those steakhouses, like especially when I say it about Peter Luger's, but people
the palm
ask me,
too.
What's that?
The Palm too.
Yeah, exactly. But with Peter Luger's specifically, people ask me, do I like it? And I say, if I'm not paying, it's my favorite restaurant in the world, and if I am paying, it's my least favorite restaurant. You know, because I mean, you sit down, and you have two people, and you know, the steak is only going to be like $45 a person, so that seems fair, and then. The cream spinach
is
$12,
and then
each glass of wine is $15, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, the steak isn't $95, the steak is $500, you know.
Full experience.
Do you guys what's your favorite steakhouse? Do you guys like Smith and Walensky? Or
that's like my family's
go-to,
my dad's
go-to
favorite
to
thing
jam.
No, he's just like, yes, like the old style steakhouses.
I like to pretend that it's actually from Zimbabwe and that they ship in the cows from Zimbabwe.
Does that help put you at ease?
Yeah, for some reason, I just, you know, because I've traveled there a bit, and it's so cool. You drive around, and the cows are just roaming, and they're really happy and stuff. So there's that whole association.
You've been to Zimbabwe?
Yeah, and then, you know, they obviously fly the cows first class as well. That's part of the whole thing.
Yeah. I love Palm. I just like a dry-aged steak.
Yeah. Palm.
Yeah,
I've only been there once, and it was a long time ago.
It's great.
Is it still good?
Yeah, yeah. I guess the last time I went, I don't know. It's all out of my price range. It's all
is,
great.
Is
when
Jeffrey
I go.
Zakarian? Was he an owner of that, or was he just the chef there? Do you know?
I don't know.
Google.
Yeah. Google right get now. On it. Smith and Walensky. Oh. I had something and then it just left me.
This is part of. I think we should have this the show on Thursday at 8:30 at night. I think Sunday morning it's fuzzy sometimes.
Oh, we should have coffee sprouting out of the microphone.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe a button straw.
What other countries have you been in Africa since you were from Africa?
Oh, Southern Africa extensively. Mozambique, Swaziland, Zambia, Botswana, Transkei, Swaziland. Did I say Swaziland
twice?
Yeah,
you said Swaziland twice.
It's so good he had to mention it twice.
Yeah, yeah. They've got really good blankets.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is the food like? The food's really
it's really cool because you've got so many different cultures coming together, and there's also a simplicity of the dishes. You know, I find that in most developing countries, the dishes are really old, really traditional, and very simple. And then you get an influx of different cultures coming in, sort of adjusting the simplicity of the dishes.
Yeah.
But they don't go too far from their originals. So, you know, one of my favorite things in South Africa is bunny chow.
Yeah.
So, like, traditionally, it's just this white bread. You cut it in half, a loaf of white bread, and then you scoop out the entire inside. And then you'll throw in an Indian curry with they call it slup chips, which are just fries.
Yeah.
Super oily fries.
I had that for the first time, I think, in 2001 at Madiba.
Oh, cool.
You know Madiba, obviously?
Yeah.
That's been there forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of an important meal for me because I was like in New York. I was kind of new to New York, and I'm like, oh, you can eat at a South African restaurant. Like, what is that? You know?
Yeah, completely.
It's great, and they have like, you know, the kind of pantry where you can buy all the South African dried goods from your childhood.
This is the best thing about New York, right? Is that you can travel the whole world through food.
Yeah,
yeah,
awesome.
I've yet to find a really good Cuban spot.
I don't know where I have to go.
Especially being from Florida, it's just really...
They don't exist in New York, I don't think. Supposedly they do, but I've not found any. But New Jersey, there's a giant Cuban community in Jersey somewhere.
There's one up the road, La Mayor, which they do great Cuban drinks, the caffeinated versions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
The Cuban coffee is pretty spot on there. But.
Yeah.
The Cuban sandwiches. Have you been to Miami?
Do you mean Cuban drinks like Irombe or
just like the cafe con leche?
Yeah.
Coffees.
Yeah.
Man, Cuban coffee. That is a very specific event.
I will give them some cred though because they do have iron beer, which that's from my childhood. You know, you remember iron beer?
Yeah,
right?
I love iron beer.
It's a great name.
Yeah, it's like the Cuban like Coca-Cola. Basically, and it's called, and it's got this weird, like, you know, like man, like weightlifter drawing on it. You know?
Really haven't updated their marketing since 1956.
Classic.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool. So maybe we'll take a little break and be back and talk some more chocolate. Yeah.
Yum. We'll start talking chocolate.
Yeah. See you soon. Don't hate. Just make some noise.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Wow, that really snuck up on us. Hi, welcome back.
Welcome back. I guess since you are a guest, Daniel, and since your passion in your business is chocolate, I guess I have some specific questions for you.
Fire away. Sunday morning is the best time to talk chocolate.
Yes. So, first off, when you were making chocolate in your apartment, where were you? You weren't roasting your beans and grinding them, were you?
In the
beginning?
No, I was making raw chocolate. Mm-hmm. And I was actually at that time. So the continuation of that story was when I left finance, I was basically desperate and broke pretty soon afterwards.
Yeah.
So you know, I started making food and that's when I became a chef.
Yeah.
And then I got into raw food chefing.
Where'd you work?
I did some just a small little... startup gigs in the city, and then I went out to the middle of nowhere in the desert in Arizona, and I worked in this Seminole Cafe, which is more, the most beautiful bunch of hippies that you can imagine, right by the border of Mexico, part of this spiritual raw food community. I mean, it was an experience. So raw food was basically carrots and lettuce chopped up.
And marijuana.
And of course. And then chocolate hit the scene, raw chocolate hit the scene. So you have this massive explosion of excitement, because you take people who are consuming lettuce, carrots, and marijuana, and then you
and
offer,
nothing else.
And then you're like, oh yeah, you can eat chocolate, and everyone freaks out. You know, so there was this really great there was this really great push for the raw chocolate. And then as soon as I started working with chocolate, there was this massive gravitational force pulling me in. I was just like, okay, I'm going to throw chocolate in everything, which doesn't really work when you're making a salad.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, the next obvious thing is, you know, you start making chocolate. And that's came back to New York, and I'm in this in Williamsburg, the building still exists somehow. It's mm-hmm. it's the last hipster dormitory around. Quotations don't work on radio. Anyway.
And gestures in
hand,
general.
Hand gestures.
If you want, I could just, I'll just...
Insert hand gesture, yeah.
announce them.
So I guess if you're Italian, it must be very hard to have a radio show. So I was doing raw chocolate. So there was no roasting. Actually at that time, the whole small chocolate scene was pretty fascinating, because it was a bunch of hobbyists, and what they did was they took machinery from other industries. So to grind the chocolate, they were using these small Indian lentil grinders.
Wow. Who's they? Or just people in the scene?
Just like small producers?
Yeah, just really an online chat forum. And some dude in Idaho and some, another, you know, and like
Reddit r raw chocolate.
Yeah. And then one or two other people. It was basically me, Nunu and Mast, who started around that time.
Do you know? I told you that like it was like probably 2004, maybe.
I love this story.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. But 2000. It would be 2006, 2007.
Yeah.
But anyways, I used to work at a bar, Busher Country Club, and the Mast Brothers were my customers, and there would be like, you know, the bar's closing, like, okay, let's go over, and we'd go back to their apartment, and you know, it wasn't like dirty or anything, but there was just chocolate everywhere. They were obsessed, and they you know, it'd be like 7 in the morning, and we'd be just, you know, trying out habanero chocolates, you know. So it was so much fun.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
When you don't roast the chocolate, what changes? I don't know. I mean, I was expecting the first time I had raw chocolate for it to be something totally different than it was, but it tastes like chocolate.
Yeah, because
it is.
We're good. We're good at what we do. But essentially, if you don't pay very careful attention, it can go south quickly. You don't get any of the cool caramelization on the chocolate without the roasting.
Yeah.
So there is stuff that you can do. So you can play with temperatures, but you can only go to a certain.
What's the number? That is it 110 or something?
There's a rule of thumb. In the raw food industry, which is a number being several numbers.
Yeah.
That's about how accurate it is.
Yeah.
And we've actually put together this pretty cool hypothesis on an idea of what to do to get to a number. And the idea is that if you can still sprout a nut or seed, mm-hmm. then we consider it raw, because it's still intact and can continue to grow. So that's sort of how. And then I got together with a buddy of mine in Sweden who's got all this. He's got lots of fun German kitchen toys that like press oil and do all these low temperature things. Mm-hmm. And we played around with the temperatures, and we got to 150. And we were still able to sprout.
Really?
Yeah, and we didn't want to go too far beyond that, because you want to push the boundaries, but You don't want to go too far.
Maybe if you have enough money, you can maybe talk to Monsanto and they could get you a GMO GMO chocolate bean that will go to like 300 and still sprout. Yeah, and then you can be like, oh.
Me and Danny and Monsanto.
Yeah, exactly. Together. And Bono.
Yeah.
Throw Bono in there.
And then it'll be a free download on your iPhone.
Yeah, exactly. So, go on.
Where were we? Northern.
Just talking about the sprouting and 150.
Oh yeah. So we got to that that point and we're like, all right, cool, we're gonna do this. That's kind of the temperature that we use. And then what we do is we do a super long low roast, raw roast at that point. And that develops the flavors. You still don't quite get the those really crazy notes of the caramelization, but then we use palm sugar, which has got a great caramel flavor to it. So as opposed to straight up sugar, which is just sweet, it has no other flavor to it. Palm sugar has this depth of flavor, and then what you start to work with is the alchemy of chocolate, which is all the depth of flavors. When you're working with really bitter flavors, you access all the depths of those flavors through a sweet, and then you get the real cool flavors coming out.
Oh, so what you're, if I understand you correctly, since you're not roasting it at 350 degrees, you do lose a little bit of the caramelization flavor, but then you make up that with the depth of flavor of the palm sugar.
Yeah,
awesome.
That's
genius.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's really cool. It's been fun getting to this point, because I really didn't know when I first started. I really didn't know about these things. I just knew that I loved certain flavors, and I'll tell you what. At the moment, I'm completely obsessed with Asian flavors, because Asian flavors do that all the time. Like all the umami and like those the deep flavors, and then the flavors beyond the flavors. And
I love lemongrass. Can we do lemongrass and chocolate? Would that work?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What about shiso? I really want to get you some shiso to play with.
Hey, let's do a dessert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know shiso?
Yeah.
Yeah. It really, we've been really playing with it with it actually does this weird thing. If you leave it open air, not in a container, and just, with like paper towels, it naturally dries. Like it doesn't mold or rot. It just naturally gets like almost like a dried leaf.
Really?
Yeah. So that's
incredible.
And we've been playing around with shiso in a dehydrator, and I've been thinking really a lot about with desserts.
Oh, we need to get together and jam.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm trying to think. Do you know shiso?
Yeah.
Yeah. It has a little bit of a cinnamon flavor to it.
Oh yeah.
So you can.
It's such an interesting ingredient.
Yeah, that was my inspiration. Have you had the carrot shiso at Momo?
Yes.
Yeah, that was my inspiration because...
love it.
Caribbean... Have you had like a Caribbean like carrot soup and they put like cinnamon on it sometimes? I was trying to think of a like traditional Caribbean like carrot soup, but then making it Japanese. So we do like shiso oil because shiso has this like little bit of cinnamon flavor to it.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
That's kind of neat, yeah.
I actually got together with this... he's a legitimate mad genius...
is he a sweet genius?
Do they
no,
certificates and stuff for that?
Restraining orders. he's not in food, he's in aroma. He's got this
he's
thing.
He's in aroma.
Yeah.
Is he one of those guys that they pay like $100,000 to come like smell perfumes?
Yeah,
he's like one of those guys.
Yeah.
What's the equivalent of a perfect palate but like a perfect nose?
Yeah. They have them.
Yeah. I'm sure they do.
Oh, they really do.
Yeah, they really do. There's people that smell for a living.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Sorry. And I do it for free.
Yeah, exactly.
Funky. Man. Oh, there's some eau de toilette off.
Downhill.
Shiso.
Anyway, well, he was explaining. We actually did some lemongrass stuff, but with you don't ingest the lemongrass. You eat chocolate, and then you take aromatherapy, and you spray the aromatherapy across your face,
This is the thing. Do I spray it in front and walk into the mist, or
we're talking mad genius here, right?
All right.
Just back to context. So, he has a device which he's painting, which is much like the headphones we're wearing, and then the headphones would spray the lemongrass across. It's really wild. Well, the premise works because your palate only tastes 5 flavors. All the other flavors are picked up by your nose.
I call a little BS on. I think palates pick up more than that.
Well, your palate is connected to your nose. Yeah. If you can't smell, you can't taste. So what that.
And visual, I definitely buy that. Like it is a whole sensory.
How many
experience.
BSs are you allowed to call during the show?
I just want to know.
Three.
Yeah, three.
After three, we start getting the Google out.
Yeah. I'm inclined to agree with you, but...
But no, the sentiment where it is this whole experience. I love the aroma scent component. I'm working right now on packaging for, because we ship meat all over the country. And trying to figure out how to do gifts in a nice way. And I thought, like, man, wouldn't it be nice if, the gift box, it was all wrapped up nice and pretty. But you also had, like, a sprig of rosemary in there. So that when you open the box, like, you immediately smell. And the meat is all packaged, in cryo. Yeah. So there's no scent experience there. But if you could have a scent experience, trying to figure out what's going to last. Maybe I'll have to talk to your mad genius friend about putting... drops of like essential oils.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
This took me back to a time and a place, but I worked at this like private dining club in Palm Beach a long time ago, and they'd open up at like say noon, and then
the history of Phil.
Yes. No, but they had
every
kind of this
we get
omelet.
A story.
But they have this omelet buffet, and the ceilings were like 50 feet tall. It's this giant like beautiful room in Palm Beach, and then like right before the doors open, the chef would take this giant fry pan and just put like about probably like 10 ounces of olive oil, get it hot, and then just throw rosemary and garlic in it, and then take it away before the customers got there. But when you walked in, it was just like just garlic and rosemary in the room, and it was just so appealing.
Yeah
I love that idea. And when I think of using lemongrass too, it's like it's always something I smell and just like have that experience, but it tastes very different than the smell that it adds. It is more of a scent.
I like lemongrass. I don't love lemongrass. It's not my favorite. It's almost too perfumey for me.
It's very subtle.
Yeah.
I mean, when I find it in a lot of Asian places, Vietnamese soups and stuff, it's great. But it's rare. You don't find it a lot.
You know you can eat it if you cut it fine enough. So you could like if you cut it like paper thin against the grain, you could caramelize it or something. That might be kind of fun.
Oh, that would be.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you something, and so it's an idea that I had that I keep on forgetting to tell you. So now I'm going to publicly broadcast it. So if you don't do something with
it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, so if you don't do something with this, it's going to disappear. The Mass brothers will do it next week if you don't. But have you guys ever had a chocolate cake shot? A chocolate cake shot.
Shot?
Yeah, it's a shot. It's all it is liquid? Frangelico. Yeah, it's Frangelico, which is the hazelnut liqueur and lemon juice. But for some reason, when you add hazelnut liqueur and lemon juice together, it tastes exactly like a German chocolate cake. So yes, I think you should do something with that.
Like after the show, we should order some
cake shots.
Waffles and chocolate cake shots.
Ooh. Yeah, but I'm just thinking, you're talking about the aroma and, like, eating the chocolate and the spray and, like, the combination of, like, there's so much out there to play with.
Yeah, there really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. Thanks, Phil.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you a question. Moving forward, Daniel Sklar.
Moving on.
Son of Joanne of Johannesburg.
Yo, mama. What's up?
What about, like, sourcing your chocolate? Because I know that's a, maybe second to coffee.
Yeah.
It's a very controversial thing where chocolate comes from.
Yeah. Sourcing is adventurous. I've been to a bunch of different farms out in Central America. It's something that I'm still learning about. Because there's not a lot of knowledge, education, literature about it.
How about this? Tell me before you talk about the good places that you get chocolate. What are the bad places? Like, what should maybe people look out for, or what's the controversy about chocolate?
While we get into the political arena here, there's a genetic modification.
Mm-hmm.
There's this thing called CN51 or something, a very apropos name for genetic modification. That's taking over a lot of the beans, because its yield is high and it's very resistant against
everything.
Everything. the next thing is just straight up organic, and then after that you have fair trade, and that goes into the conversation about
ethics
and children and all that kind of stuff,
and making sure people are getting fair wages.
Yeah.
I mean, are there places where there are indentured servants or even slaves that are producing chocolate, or is it something like that?
The dark side of chocolate.
The dark.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, there's probably people that are making zero, like almost no money. But
yeah, there is. There definitely is some very unpalatable practices out there.
Yeah.
I think the main issue here is understanding other cultures. So, although there are kids working on farms, they work with their families. I'm not even sure how to go about this to justify some of the situations that are out there.
Yeah.
Which seem very healthy when you go there and people are very happy and the kids are happy, and look, there are always issues, like maybe they're not getting enough schooling, but they're just super happy people.
Yeah.
All the way through to stories where I've heard where it is like, yeah, slavery.
Yeah.
It's a very tricky call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think just being aware of it is the first step, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And you've been to where do you buy most of your chocolate from? What country?
Right now we're in West Africa.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where?
Mostly from Ghana.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. Which is actually a hotspot for a lot of political issues.
Mm-hmm.
Surrounding chocolate. And I have this crazy theory, though, because from what I've seen and the co-ops that I've spoken to and worked with, mm-hmm. everything seems to be pretty copacetic, but it still has a very bad reputation. This is my conspiracy theory, is mm-hmm. that a lot of that chocolate goes to big companies in Europe, and one of the ways for big companies in Europe to protect their agriculture is to give it a bad reputation so no one else touches it.
Ooh.
I mean, I don't know if that's how accurate I am on this. It's just something that I cotton on to, because I speak to a lot of people who get very upset, and then when I speak to them, I'm like, well, what's really going on? And they really don't know. They don't have any justification for,
like, making up stories to make it seem undesirable to buy the product, so that you could go and buy it cheaper, kind of thing. Or
yeah,
or just protect it so other companies don't come in. It's like when you trash a spot on Yelp so people don't.
yeah, totally.
So you can get a reservation on Friday night.
Exactly.
Not a bad idea.
No.
Well, I mean, I know like campaign spots like that, but in kind of places that people want to keep low key.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just post up a bunch of really negative public.
Yeah.
Information.
Yeah, you got to filter through these things.
Are you saying like the political environment or the actual source, the actual chocolate itself has a bad reputation?
The political environment, so the way that people are treated, I would say that de facto 85% of all chocolate is organic, just because it's in the jungle and dudes don't have money to buy pesticides, etc.
It's not. Yeah, it's sort of a consequence of being not a goal in the production of chocolate.
Yeah, so there's that. I think the big issues are genetic modification and
fair labor.
Yeah, and fair labor.
Working conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to bring the Western lens to other countries in any way to look at their child labor laws and things, because from an economic point of view, you can take, you know, just saying children shouldn't be working, blanketed statement, is just not necessarily appropriate for all cultures and countries and where they are economically.
Right.
That being said, it is a tough political issue, because there is a lot of, exploitation.
Yeah.
How do you avoid that? So you just have to know who you're buying it from and who your source is and how the company is structured.
We're working towards direct trade, which is also kind of a funny thing, because it goes through all the same channels. You just go and visit the farms and like hang out with the farmers for a bit and have a beer or two with them, and then it's direct trade, which actually it's
is it better?
It can benefit them. Yeah, they can get better prices. And there is a, as a chocolate maker, I think it's the coolest thing to do. What do you want to do in your job? Want to sit around all day, concocting mad recipes, and then eating mad recipes that
and
have concocted.
Visiting the awesome people that are making it in far off locations.
Then, like, get on a plane and like go to Costa Rica, Guatemala, surf a little, and then come back to the factory, and fix the plumbing and fix the machines and
make sure mirrors don't fall on people. There's a mirror that fell on Chu Fu, he said, but it was only a little tiny one. No, I'm sorry.
It was a very expensive spill.
Yeah. To the listeners out there, Daniel actually made chocolate special for my little brother for his wedding, but he just called me. So that was in the Bahamas, but then they were just at some little boutique in Boulder, Colorado, and they had to wipe their eyes. I thought they were dreaming, but there was a little boutique, clothing store, and they right at the counter they had some fine and raw chocolate right there in Boulder.
Yeah, yeah.
Thousands of miles away.
Yeah,
from this block.
Ashley, your sister-in-law, she emailed me. She was so psyched. It was cool. And it's really great to have that. We work with the most interesting little spots. It'll be some boutique in Boulder, Colorado, or an Art Deco hotel in Martha, and just fascinating places with a lot of character.
The person that owned the boutique, was she part of the cult that you were part of in Arizona? Is that how you know her?
Yeah. She gets discount on the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess we should also announce, to be good friends and help your business, that you, if anyone is interested in trying fine and raw chocolate, that you guys do mail order through your website.
Yeah, we do.
And they can also request it of their favorite chocolate boutique to start carrying fine and raw, I'm sure.
That's right, they can.
What is your largest retail account, if I can ask you that? Is that a good question?
Largest retail account?
Is that a good question?
Is that fair? Like, are you in Whole Foods? Are you in any Whole Foods?
Or? Yeah. Whole Foods is they're a good chunk of our business.
Yeah.
And they've grown a lot. We only work with the local Whole Foods.
Mm-hmm.
And then Organic Avenue is one that they go through a lot of chocolate.
Wow.
Yeah.
The employees are probably stealing it because it's so good. Eating it.
Yeah, most likely.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys are a juice company. So once again, it's just like they drink juices and eat chocolate. That's all they do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Just like you did in the border of Mexico.
Completely. Some people go to Smith and Wolensky. Some people eat chocolate and drink juice.
What's for the future for you, Daniel? Are you going to start making other desserts?
Yeah.
I know you experiment a lot. I'm kind of your little guinea pig.
Yeah. Let's see. I have, there's a week that we're part of, which is starting on March 2nd. It's a Tastemakers Week.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a coconut dulce de leche flight for that. Yeah, it's baller. So basically it's It's coconut cream turned into dulce de leche. But it's not even coconut cream. What we do is go straight to the commodity. We go straight to the coconut. So we start with coconut, and then we make coconut butter. Wow. And then we make the coconut cream, and then we get dulce de leche. Wow. Up on that shit, it's crazy good.
But it's not. Is it not raw though? Right?
No. That's not raw. And then that. So the flight is that, and then this a little something called a white candy truffle. Have you tried the white?
I've tried the white candy.
Yeah, that's
it's amazing.
Is that the palm sugar that comes through so much on the white candy?
To me, the thing I like about the white candy is that it's actually a nostalgic flavor, which it just exists in your mind.
Yeah.
It's not real. It's just this. It's just like pushing the nostalgia buttons.
I can't pin it, but there's just something I really like about it. It's like I just have a bite, and I just find myself if I have one of those chocolate. I often have.
It has like a low melting point. Like you put it, like you put it in here. It just all this tart starts liquefying.
So. Yeah.
Well, anyways, this has been really informative, and thank you so much for coming, Daniel.
This has been so awesome. Thanks, guys.
And also, too, it's kind of fun to stop by the Fine and Raw, the actual factory, because you can just walk in and watch them spinning the chocolate. They have beautiful coffee there, and you can get hot chocolate. Yeah. What's the address of your chocolate factory?
It's 288 Siegel Street, right off the L train on the Morgan stop.
Yeah.
Hop, skip, and a jump.
Well,
you can go to Momo's and get some sushi and then come get some dessert.
Yay! Well, I hope you guys have a beautiful Sunday.
Yeah, happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Yeah.
Talk to you guys soon.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.